Sarah Ganim covered Penn State's sex abuse scandal long before it hit the national headlines. She broke the story that a grand jury was investigating Jerry Sandusky for sexual abuse allegations. He's the former defensive coordinator for the storied Penn State University football program. Her reporting of the scandal that enveloped the school, head coach Joe Paterno, and Sandusky's Second Mile charity garnered a Pulitzer Prize in 2012. At 24, Ganim was one of the youngest journalists to ever receive the award. I interviewed Ganim last fall when she came to the Journalism and Women Symposium's annual conference in Albuquerque. As I drove her back to the airport, she recounted how she got her first tip about Sandusky in 2009 when she was a reporter at the Center Daily Times. She was talking to a source, and before hanging up, she followed a practice that had become a habit as a beat reporter. She asked if there was anything else going on in the community that she should know about.
I was obsessed with having a good grasp on the community, and if a crime happened in our county, I wanted to know about it. And so I asked that question after the conversation as I was hanging up, and the person said, you know, oh, actually, by the way, Jerry Sandusky's been accused of molesting a boy in his basement during sleepovers. Actually, I don't think the word basement was used. Jerry Sandusky's been accused of molesting a boy during sleepovers at his house. And that was how it started. I didn't actually really know much about Jerry Sandusky at the time. He was about 10 years retired at that point from the program, the football program. What he was known for in the community at that point was his charity, his children's charity. And so when I Googled him and that came up, in my crime reporter brain, I knew, you know, it was a big deal that a guy who has a children's charity is accused of molesting a child, and I needed to follow that up. There was no strong Penn State connection other than he was a retired former coach until early 2011, when it became clear that there were other allegations too, and those allegations, not only were they on Penn State's campus, but some of them were back when he was still the coach. From there, there wasn't a whole lot of anything for a while. There was no documents. No one was talking about anything. A lot of people, I don't think, knew about it at that point. There was nothing. And 6 weeks after that tip, that same person called me back and said, hey, remember that thing I told you? It's not true. And I had no reason not to believe this person. So, yeah, I couldn't find anything. No one was talking about it. No one knew anything. And this person says it's not true. You know, false allegations do happen. It wasn't until the following summer, that coming summer, his charity had its annual fundraiser. And he wasn't there. And it turned out he wasn't there because the charity knew he was accused. They knew he was under investigation. They knew he probably shouldn't be there. But they never talked about what to say when people asked where he was. And so when I asked why he wasn't there, I got two different answers. And that kind of was a red flag.
Ganim continued talking to people, but nothing broke until the following year when she tracked down the family of one of Sandusky's accusers. By the time her first story ran in March 2011, she had moved to the Patriot Ledger, a larger paper in Harrisburg with more resources. It ran the stories of two victims.
They had more staffing. They realized that this was an important story. Not that the Center Daily Times didn't realize that, but there was just no time. And with six reporters, you know, I even didn't want to pull myself away from the Daily because I felt, you know, who's to say this story is less important than the other one? I'm not going to abandon stories that are happening right now. It was more of a nights and weekends kind of investigation for me at the CDT. At the Patriot, we were able to allocate resources differently, and I just spent weeks and weeks knocking on doors, not consecutively because I was still working on other stuff. But if you add it all together, I was able to spend a good amount of time on that story, and we were able to get enough. That puts a lot of credit, though, on me, and it's not fair. My editors were really good. They had some really good ideas, and most importantly, I think we had amazing lawyers who guided us in how we can approach people, what kind of questions we could ask, and how to make sure that we were getting our facts in a way that they would, you know, if we got certain information, it would stick. And so when we had the story, we had it rock solid.
Reactions to the first story were mixed.
There were some people who said, you've ruined this guy's life. He hasn't been charged yet. He'll never be charged. How could you do that? There were also a lot of people who said, like, you know, wow, we wouldn't have run that, but we're really glad you did. And then there was a lot of silence. It was interesting. The big moment was his arrest. And when that indictment came out and there were 8 allegations from 8 different boys and it was very graphic and so widely read, that document, it was a court document and most people don't read those, especially in sex crimes cases, but that one was 23 pages that was so widely read and it just exploded into a national news story, which I didn't realize at the time. I knew it was a national news story, but I didn't realize at the time how big it was, that it was leading the nightly news for 4 or 5 days.
Backlash against the stories came when Joe Paterno, a revered figure in the storied history of Penn State football, was implicated. He was accused of ignoring Sandusky's crimes. Paterno did not face criminal charges, but was dismissed from his job. He was diagnosed with lung cancer 1 week after charges were filed against Sandusky, and he died in January of last year. Diehard supporters of Paterno blamed media coverage and leveled online threats at Ganim.
There are a lot of people who just cannot accept those allegations. And part of it is because he's dead and he's not around to defend himself. And part of it is, I think, a cultural thing in Pennsylvania. And part of it is because it's not a criminal allegation. It's civil. It was something that the university has made and people feel like they're ganging up on a dead man. But it's interesting for me because I get two sides of it. I get both you killed him and you've wrongfully accused him, and I get that you're too easy on him, and I get an equal number of both. And so that's pretty confusing for me. You know, how could you be both of those things? I guess I'm probably somewhere down the middle, which is right where I should be. People read what they want to read. No matter how straight a story might be, they disregard the facts they don't like, and they accept the facts that they do like, and they read these stories to fit into the belief that they've come into them with, you know, these preset notions, and we've seen a lot of that. I've witnessed a lot of defensiveness, and I would sit in coffee shops in the beginning, you know, in the mornings, and I would hear people say, just get out of our town, we can handle this ourselves. People were cutting the cables to news trucks that were, you know, overnight. That's the mentality that got them into trouble in the first place. You know, this whole idea of we handle our problems internally. And as an alum, personally, I think that I'd be so proud to see, and not that this isn't happening, but it certainly isn't the vocal majority. You accept that you've made a mistake. You accept that your university has made a mistake. You learn from it. You move forward. You do some good from it. That's always kind of been obvious to me, but I guess it's not obvious to everyone.
That's not happening.
Some people. I can't say that, you know, I'm not going to generalize it, but those are certainly not the people that are the most vocal. You know, crime reporting in almost all circumstances is you're covering content that's not good. You know, you're covering bad content. But what's nice to see is that a lot of good almost always comes from it in some way, whether or not it's a fire victim getting a toothbrush the next day because someone knows they're a fire victim, or a social issue that is been attention has been brought to it, or change comes of it, new laws, you know, different ways of reporting things. And that's definitely happened in this case. I think that's been phenomenal. We saw in the very beginning, you know, just days after he was charged, grown men in their 50s and 60s getting up and standing in front of television cameras and talking about sex abuse they endured as children. These men would never, ever in a million years have done that, except they were inspired by these 8 kids that did come forward and they felt they needed to talk about it. It's opened up conversations in people's homes where this topic would never have otherwise been discussed. I think it's educated a lot of kids, educated a lot of adults. I think it's brought about a lot of really good social change. And even in newsrooms, the way that we cover this topic is now changing. You saw a lot of institutions come out and say, you know, we had a similar situation, we're going to start talking about it. You know, the Citadel was one of those that came out almost immediately. I think the Boy Scout story that came out last week might not have, you know, come out with such magnitude if Jerry Sandusky had never been arrested. So I think we see a lot of really good things come of a story that includes a lot of really, really bad. You know, I think if I ever have children, the story that I will tell them about this is that is a lesson in idol worship. I really, truly, it's not fair. It's not just about the people who do it. It's not fair to the person that they're worshiping. You can't expect someone to be perfect and to hold them to such a high standard. It's just all around, it's not a good thing. And I just feel like human beings are smarter than that, and we shouldn't make ourselves seem so unintelligent when you do something like that. I don't get it.
Winning the Pulitzer was a surprise for Ghanem.
I didn't think we were going to win. There's a small paper in Maine. They have one reporter, one editor, and one photographer. And they single-handedly changed housing laws with their stories. And they were in our category. I was just convinced they were going to win. And then we won, and I was pretty shocked. Not surprisingly, with the nature of this story and how much news has generated from it, the next day was a 20-hour day because stuff was breaking. And I do remember sitting with my boss at the table at Columbia University, and he's looking around the room going, all these people, their stories are over, and our story, it's really just beginning. I mean, all the other stories, most of them have concluded. They did the work that won the Pulitzer, and that story is done. It's over, and our story is nowhere near that. I'm definitely ready to work on more things. I haven't actually written a story about anything else since he was arrested, and so that's about 11 months, and I'm ready to do other things. I don't want to leave the story. I don't want to abandon it. I want to continue working on it, but I'm ready to do other things, too. I talk to college kids a lot, and I always say who you work for makes a big difference. Again, not the name, but the kind of work that you're doing. And it's not a 9-to-5 job. You have to practice working on stories that are never going to make it into print. And you have to do it because when luck and circumstance favor you and this big story falls into your lap, if you've never had to brainstorm about getting around brick walls, you're not going to know what to do with it. You have to know what to do with it. You have to be practiced at writing a lot in one day and doing Twitter and shooting video and taking pictures, and it all makes a huge difference. And if you put all of that effort into every story, then when you have a big story, it's just going to come more naturally. It's going to be easier.
Sarah Ghanem now works for CNN in Atlanta. You can read her stories on Jerry Sandusky at her website, sarahghanem.wordpress.com. Ghanem is spelled G-A-N-I-M. Sandusky was convicted last summer of sexually abusing 10 boys, some on Penn State's campus. He's serving a 30 to 60-year state prison sentence, but he maintains he's innocent and is pursuing appeals. In December, Ghanem became the youngest person ever to receive the prestigious Sydney Award for Socially Conscious Journalism. Said one of the judges, Sarah Ghanem had the guts to take on the most powerful institutions in her community, and she won. For Women's Focus, I'm Megan Kamrick.